Support for the European Union is collapsing within the European Union. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Molly Wood, in for David Brancaccio. Euroscepticism is the new trend in Europe, according to a new survey. The Pew Research Center finds that only the slimmest majority think there's benefit in EU membership. That poll comes 2 weeks before the Brits vote on a possible Brexit. But the country with the least happy feelings about the EU was not Britain in this poll. It was Greece. Joining us from Athens is Marketplace's Stephen Beard. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Molly.
So no surprise then that only 27% of Greeks now favor the EU?
No. Greece is obviously not prospering in the EU. It's the only economy using the euro that shrank in the first quarter, and unemployment remains catastrophically high, about 25%, 50% for youth. And many Greek people blame their European creditors for this, for, as they see it, forcing austerity on them in return for the three bailouts.
Yeah, we spent so much time talking about the Greek crisis. After 6 years, there's still no sign of improvement. Is there any light at the end of the tunnel here?
Well, the head of the Athens Chamber of Commerce says he's beginning to feel optimistic. But I've been here for 3 or 4 days, and I have to tell you, I haven't come across anybody who shares his optimism. As ever, the problem is debt. I mean, this country owes $340 billion, 180% of its GDP. It is borrowing more and more to repay what it's already borrowed, and there seems to be no way out.
So Greece must be looking at the prospect of Brexit with some interest. What are they saying about that?
Well, this is what everyone's talking about here. In fact, it's Brexit rather than Grexit for a change. Mm-hmm. And the reactions are kind of various. I mean, some people are quite vengeful and saying, good, we hope the Brits do pull out. It'll give the EU a good kicking. The EU will learn a lesson for punishing us, as they see it, so much over the past 6 years. Others, however, are more fearful. They are afraid that if the second biggest economy in this bloc does pull out, then the weakest, Greece, will suffer in the ensuing turmoil. But overall, you know, there seems to be kind of a sense of relief that for once, Greece is not the one that's rocking the EU boat.
Right. Nice to talk about someone else for a change. That's Marketplace's Stephen Beard joining us from Athens. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Molly.
A slow-growing world economy and a slump in commodities that will not let up is causing big problems for emerging nations. That's according to new World Bank research. It says a majority of emerging and developing economies are not catching up with richer countries in terms of income. And it's the first time it's been that bad since the turn of the century. The bank said commodity exporting countries were performing much worse than expected. Countries that might have caught up to the U.S. in a generation now will take several decades longer. In Nigeria, in fact, that catch-up period has gone from 43 years to almost 110. The World Bank says most emerging markets could take an average of 42 years to get caught up. In the San Francisco Bay Area, voters have passed a $500 million parcel tax measure. It'll pay for restoring marshes and wetlands along the shoreline of the bay. Supporters say these wetlands are a relatively cheap way to use nature to fight off sea level rise. That's something that threatens many of the Bay Area residents, huge parts of Silicon Valley, and of course, people in coastal cities all over the world. Warner Chabot is executive director of the San Francisco Estuary Institute. Good morning, Warner.
Good morning.
And so talk about those costs of using wetlands as a buffer. How does that compare to, you know, what we think of as more traditional infrastructure like levees or even a system of canals and waterways?
Well, one, it's cheaper. Two, it's ecologically better. When you start putting in hard surfaces like levees and seawalls, they tend to bounce the waves back that will end up causing even greater erosion at other places that don't have levees. The added benefit is not only do they provide multiple benefits of buffering the shoreline from storms, they also end up filtering pollutants that come down. They also provide a recreational and wildlife opportunities. If we are able to restore 100,000 acres of wetlands around the edge of the bay, that's the equivalent of basically creating something like Central Park at the edge of the bay to serve the 7 million people that live within a few miles of the bay.
And do you see wetland restoration as a model for coastal cities throughout the rest of the world? Because obviously sea level rise is a problem everywhere.
Absolutely. You know, about 40% of the world lives within a few miles of the coast. Most of the megacities on the planet are right on the edge of the coast. So San Francisco is trying to provide a global model for how a major urban region on the edge of the sea protects billions in assets in a very cost-effective manner that works with nature rather than trying to fight nature.
How do you take the wetlands model to states or regions that don't have natural wetlands the way the Bay Area does?
It doesn't work everywhere, but there are vast areas of the planet where it does work. There might have to be other solutions that you try in other countries and other shorelines, but just as they are trying to do in Louisiana and in portions of New York and New Jersey, they are still trying to restore the natural wetlands that have been in decline over the years. So a vast majority of the world does have shorelines that has wetlands that can be restored. It's not the panacea and solution to everything, but it is a solution for many portions of the shoreline.
That's Warner Chabot from the San Francisco Estuary Institute. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And in New York, I'm Molly Wood with the Marketplace Morning Report. If you miss us on the radio, get caught up with our podcast. You'll find all our shows at our website, marketplace.org. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.